What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Hey, Ali, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks, I'm really excited to have you for this conversation. Just kind of getting right into it. You know, I'm a little bit familiar with tahini restaurants now. I see you guys all the time on Bitcoin Twitter. But can you tell us a little bit more about you guys for maybe people not familiar?
So we're a franchise chain right now, and we're based out of London, Ontario. And we started the restaurant business here in London about 8 to 9 years ago. And we started with one restaurant, grew into 2, 3, and now the fourth. And we switched to a franchise model, and we have 3 franchisees about to open up.
When did you switch to a franchise model?
So we did that. Well, we've been prepping for it for past 5 years.
Wow. Okay.
But it takes a lot of work to get everything right. So this year is basically where we kicked off the gears, you know, and we're going at it. We have 3 franchisees about to open up in Ontario, and it's
nice.
Pretty exciting.
So when I come to Tahini's restaurants, what are we gonna get? What are we eating on the menu?
So you are eating the best Middle Eastern cuisine you can ever have. You're going to have shawarmas, falafels, shawarmas on rice, kebabs, all the good stuff, all the Mediterranean, Middle Eastern cuisine. So, yeah, you can get a lot of stuff at Tahini's.
That sounds great. What about in supermarkets? Are you guys got products in supermarkets now?
No, not really. We kind of tried selling our hummus in supermarkets, but the way the supermarkets want to operate is they just want to private label everything and do it themselves. So, you know, it's too much of a competitive market for us to be in. So we're just focusing on ourselves now.
Got it. And I've noticed, I mean, you know, just on Twitter now, I see you guys all the time. I think your Twitter profile is great. And you guys are both food Twitter and Bitcoin Twitter, which I find interesting.
Yeah.
Usually most entities are one or the other. I think your food Twitter looks great. I'm not in food Twitter too much, but your food looks amazing. And I like this. A lot of the videos you guys have, it makes the food look great.
Thank you.
What has been the reaction maybe from the food Twitter world to everything they see that you guys are putting out in the Fin Twitter, the Bitcoin Twitter feed?
So honestly, we basically came into Twitter for Bitcoin Twitter. I don't really try to go after food Twitter that much. We were actually the only, like, before we got into Bitcoin, we were never on Twitter.
Right. Okay, I saw that. It doesn't go back. It goes, I mean, you guys are really active, so your timeline is now full.
Yeah.
It took quite a bit of scrolls to get through it. And then I wasn't sure if, like, I just wasn't loading anymore. But so I guess you guys are kind of new to both. But it seems like you guys are rapid fire and really good at it right away, which not everybody obviously is.
Yeah, we got into the Bitcoin rabbit hole after the March crisis, I like to call it. Twitter was a platform where I personally spent a lot of time on, and when we had our company switch to a Bitcoin standard, I wanted our company to be on Twitter.
Sure.
Right
before we jump into the Bitcoin story, how big is your company? How many employees do you have? Maybe walk us through how many locations you have and are opening, just to get a sense of how large you guys are.
Yeah,
and tell us maybe about who your partners are.
Yeah, so we right now we're 3 locations, opening up the fourth. The fourth was supposed to be open earlier this year, but because of COVID and everything, construction got delayed. Everything got delayed, really. We have also like a commissary, like a factory where we manufacture our stuff and deliver it to the restaurants. Number of employees, it changes. I think it's around 60.
Oh, wow.
60. And every location that opens adds another 20 on there. So
right on. That's big.
61 to 80.
Oh, wow.
No, I don't want to say big, but we're medium. We're not just a mom and pop shop.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So tell us more about, what led you guys either maybe as individuals or as a company, to Twitter, to Bitcoin and this rabbit hole that you guys have been down.
Okay. So our Bitcoin story is basically, two parallel stories that kind of go together. The first one is the business story. So business was booming for us. Everything was great. We were expanding, lining up locations outside of London, and cash balances were healthy. Everything was good. And then March hit, and then everything slumped. Like, we kind of hit a brick wall, and sales dropped like 80% within like a week.
Right.
Right. And it was pretty bad. Right. And we did what any, entrepreneur that has a business would do. Like, if that happens to you, like, what do? You just go work day and night to keep the business alive.
Sure.
So that's what we did. Basically, our company is we're three partners. It's me, my brother, and my cousin. And
you
we
guys,
each kind of
three from the beginning with the first restaurant, or did your brother and cousin come on later on?
Well, actually, yeah. So it was me and my brother at first, and then our cousin. We brought our cousin in after to be the chief operating officer.
Got it. Very cool. And what were you guys doing before the restaurants?
So before the restaurants, we were in Egypt, actually, and. I got my education in Egypt, and my brother was working in like a development company in Egypt, and we just decided to move. We were there during the Egyptian Revolution, 2011.
Okay.
And that was quite the experience.
Sure, I can imagine.
Yeah, we watched the whole thing go down. We were in it. And after the revolution, we just hopped on a plane and came to Canada. We're originally Canadian citizens, but I kind of grew up back in Egypt.
So, how much do you think that experience played into, I guess, your framework around Bitcoin?
So that's an interesting question. I kind of wanted to get into that later on, but since you asked it, that actually played a big role, because when after the revolution, so my parents worked their whole lives and had their wealth stored in Egypt. And the revolution hit. And so the government pretty much blocked the money to be like, they couldn't move their money outside because they moved with us, right? So they wanted to get their wealth from Egypt to Canada here. And the Egyptian government pretty much blocked it, says, no, you can't do it right now.
What methods do they use to block it at that time? Just not letting you get the banks, right? Okay.
Yeah.
They won't let you take your money out of your bank account.
You can't transfer any amounts of money.
Got it. And this is 2010, 2011, or 2009?
This was 2012, 2012, 13.
Yeah, and maybe, I'm kind of curious, like, what is the access like to the U.S. dollar at that point there, at all, or?
Yeah, so at that time, 12, 13, 14, you couldn't, you couldn't even withdraw in dollars. And you couldn't you couldn't move it across the country. So while it was blocked during that time, before the revolution, one Canadian dollar was equal to five or six Egyptian pounds, give or take. After those few years went by and everything went down, it went up to 17, $18. And that alone is to see that happening to your parents' money and to see them go through that, that alone kind of builds a framework in your mind to the transition to Bitcoin.
Sure. And then I'm assuming, jumping ahead, now you're entrepreneurs and it really gives you a balance sheet management framework or risk management, I'm thinking, how to protect your money and your wealth and preserve it.
100%.
Got it. Yeah. Awesome.
100%. Yeah.
Sure.
That was a good story. It was a good basis. I didn't even know about Bitcoin at that time. Yeah. Like I heard about it and dismissed it.
Sure.
Kind of thing.
And how are you going to put store your family's wealth in a 1.5 or 2-year-old, 3-year-old network that's worth $30-40 million at that time? Yeah. I understand. Yeah. The option wasn't there. And you can't bring gold out of the country either at that time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so the whole, like, you know, I like the way Pierre Richard talks about it as a kind of a, what problem does Bitcoin solve for you? That's what he was talking about yesterday on our show. And it sounds like for you going into the business, obviously balance sheet management was a big concern coming out of the COVID scare. So can you jump a little fast forward maybe to, you know, March and... Or what brought you to Bitcoin?
Yes. So after we got the business back on track, we started reaching out to the employees that we let go and trying to bring them back. And everybody was just saying, no, I don't want to come back. I'm getting free money from, you know, the programs.
Like unemployment or in Canada?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And... We kind of realized that money is just being worth less. Business was coming back. Our balance sheets are healthy. The good thing is we got newer employees to get on, so we were good there. But we had this feeling that money is just not worth the same anymore.
Right.
So that's the business side story. The Bitcoin story that goes in parallel with that was, it was like my personal story, right? So before going into the crash, I had my savings all in stocks, and I was lucky enough to sell like 75% of my portfolio and keep it in cash before, like, in January.
Oh, wow.
Right? Before the crash. And I didn't, it wasn't like I'm not like Superman or anything. It's just I was lucky. I had a gut feeling. I went with it, and it worked out. So when the crash came, everything went down so hard in March.
How are you managing at this point, your money at this point, though? Where are you getting your education or your guidance? Is it from Twitter? Is it podcasts? These are big decisions you're making.
So I've always been interested in finance and investing. I've always been investing my money. I've always been like a saver, investor, type money. Don't spend more like than what you make, save what you have, invest it. Like that's the past like 10 years of my life. Right.
Got it.
So when March hit, I pretty much went all in, and on stocks.
Okay.
Right. But I bought a little Bitcoin.
So you were buying blood on the streets.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
Right.
Good for you.
And thank you. But I bought a little bit of Bitcoin.
Okay. And so is this the first time you're buying Bitcoin? Is in March.
First time.
Got it.
Yeah, and I bought it through like a stock. Okay, I Googled how to buy Bitcoin stock market. I found GBTC, and I just bought that.
Okay, so you buy GBTC.
First time, yeah.
Got it. Right. How do you buy GBTC? Like on your Fidelity account?
It's your brokerage account.
Right.
Right.
And what do you think of GBTC now? I'm just curious hold?
Right now, personally, I own my own Bitcoin.
Okay. And so you've moved out of the GBTC position together, all together. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So in March, you're buying everything, including Bitcoin.
Yes. So when I bought Bitcoin, and this is something that always happens with any company you invest in or anything like that, is when you buy something, you start to study it a little bit more, right?
Right.
And when I got it out of curiosity that I thought, look, it was interesting. And so I started doing
You Googled it. I mean, maybe you heard about it before you Googled it.
So I heard about it actually from Preston Pish's podcast, the Investors Podcast.
Right on.
And
he's great.
He's amazing.
Yeah,
he's right?
Amazing.
And I've been working with him for years.
Sure. Okay.
And it was interesting. And when I saw it drop down that 50%, I was like, this is probably a good opportunity. So I jumped in, and then I did more research, Cedric, and the more research I made.
What are you diving into? What are you using for research? Still on Google or YouTube or Twitter, or are there podcasts? Everything.
Everything.
Cool. Okay.
So the first thing that had me like click and just dive in with all like jump in the pool was Robert Breedlove's article.
Yeah.
The number zero on Bitcoin.
Yeah, fascinating article.
Amazing. And I read that once, twice, and I watched him talk about it and all of that. And it just clicked for me. And then I went down the rabbit hole ever since.
It's interesting because it's an extremely powerful article. It's not one I would think to give to someone who hasn't really come at Bitcoin with no other framework about Bitcoin. It's just a fascinating, very layered, textured, high, you know, big brain article.
Yeah,
pretty wild stuff.
It made sense for me. I did have a little bit of background, like I said before, but not a lot. But it just makes sense of how money should operate.
Right.
Right. That the idea of absolute scarcity is the idea of what money should be.
Sure.
Well, when I read that, it just kind of clicked for me. I bought Saif Dean's book, The Bitcoin Standard.
Yeah.
Right? That was the first thing I did after that.
Yeah. Landmark book.
Yeah. I devoured that in like 3 days and then bought more Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Read more articles, bought more Bitcoin.
Right.
Listened to more podcasts, bought more Bitcoin. And I just kept buying. And I was lucky that like my stocks kept going up. Because I bought in March, I put everything in March, and everything started going up, and I just started buying more. I sold more stocks, bought more Bitcoin. So first I finished all my cash in Bitcoin, then I started selling stocks and buying more Bitcoin. And I was just down the rabbit hole ever since. And then as I was doing that, I dragged my partners down the rabbit hole with me. So I would send them all the articles, send them all the resources. We talk about it. And this is all going on with all the chaos. Like this is a multi-layered, like Bitcoinization going on here in this company. So they basically dragged down with me and we discuss it. And they bought it personally for themselves and their portfolio. And they started reading more and more about it. And that's when we pretty much finished all our cash, we talked about, putting some of the company's cash into Bitcoin.
That's a pretty heavy conversation, I'm sure.
Yeah, that was a lot of conversations.
Right.
But they all like understand the idea, right, of the Bitcoin standard. And when we saw MicroStrategy do it, we were like, this is it, game on. It's probably going to be a race of accumulation from this point, and more companies are going to start doing this. So we jumped on it as fast as we can.
Yeah, I think you guys announced on Twitter maybe 4 days after them or something like that. We're really close. Yeah. So did you move as a company within then 4 days in terms of, we've reached consensus, but like, let's act now.
So the conversation was happening before it.
Yeah. But like when you guys made the decision, like we saw MicroStrategy, you have no Bitcoin as a company. And then within a week or two, you have your position as a company.
The day MicroStrategy announced it, we had the conversation to do it, and we decided on that day.
Right, right. So you guys took action right away.
Right away.
Amazing. Right. Got it.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
yeah. And then that was our Bitcoin story, and we wanted to make it clear that it wasn't just like a portion of our money. No, it's all of our cash reserves into Bitcoin. And yeah, and this is what we want to do. We want to adopt the Bitcoin standard.
Yeah. I thought it took a lot of bravado to make the announcement on Twitter. And I'm kind of curious what your, just because I think it's bold, it's not really on your brand in terms of restaurants and things like that. I think it's awesome. And I think you guys have become like a really like strong voice in the Bitcoin Twitter community really quickly. And I think it's been interesting to watch. You know, I've only been around since, say, 2017. So I'm new too, but it's really great seeing this newer wave that's come to it with kind of eyes from March, really, where I don't know if you would have saw this or this or would have seized the moment if we weren't in this particular moment. As a company, I can't see you guys doing this a year ago or MicroStrategy doing this a year ago at all. Yeah. With the same maybe education and knowledge and podcast going on. So it's really fascinating. What has been the reaction from like the Ontario, the area you guys are in, like from customers, other businesses? What's just been the reaction?
So a lot of people here think we're crazy.
Okay. me too. So.
Yeah. And yeah, like I just think they don't understand it. We try to help educate and help them understand why we did this. And I really think it's this, like that Bitcoin is beneficial for everyone. So I don't want to just buy it and not talk about it.
Yeah.
I want to help other people do it. I'd rather see a world where the small businesses and medium-sized businesses jump in first before the big corporations.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's been a big theme in your tweets. And it seems like you guys are out to help people and kind of like wake people up.
100%. Because the fact is that, Cedric, like Bitcoin is the fairest money in history, right?
Yep.
And it's not going to care about your feelings, right? It's just going to do what it does.
Sure.
Right? Agreed. So, if we have a chance to front run this thing, we're going to solve the fairness problem, right? But Bitcoin's not going to solve the inequality problem, right? So if all the corporations jump in and hodl, just gobble it all up, right? We're going to end up with the same inequality that we have right now.
Bitcoin's for enemies, so.
Right? Yep. So exactly. And we hoped that as like a medium-sized company, we would be an inspiration to other small and medium-sized companies to do the same.
Yeah, and I agree with that, and that's why I wanted to bring you guys on the show, because I think there are more entities, and partnerships and companies that are your size versus, say, MicroStrategy.
100%.
Yeah, so, I think that you guys being a voice, I say risky in the most positive way. You guys are doing like, mitzvah and really trying to reach out to the community and push a good voice and, forward. And I really enjoyed it. And I find that really, powerful.
We're not only trying to like do that, but we're also trying to drag people down that rabbit hole in a way where the average person can relate to. So the one thing that I made it my goal on Twitter is to have like this, we started doing this threads of Bitcoin content that would introduce people to Bitcoin. And it's all videos and audio podcasts and stuff like that. But it also links to other threads that have more and more content.
Yeah.
And eventually we want to build like a big rabbit hole so people can just look, this is why we did it. If you want to learn more, watch this, listen to this, read this, learn, educate yourself. and then come ask us why we did this.
Yeah, I really appreciated that thread, as well as a few of the other threads you had. I'm curious, what have been maybe, did your bank talk to you about this, or were there any legal or finance or accounting issues you guys have had to deal with so far related to this that maybe other small business owners, you know, that could learn from your experience? I'm not going to ask you any, you know, specific details about security or, you know, anything like that, but if there's any kind of thoughts or, you know, lessons you could share?
So we wanted to, personally, we buy Bitcoin and we store it ourselves. But for the company, we have a brokerage account in our company, and we use that to buy Bitcoin trusts. And we wanted to jump in, like I said, as fast as possible, because you know how it is with Bitcoin. You always have this feeling that you need to own more,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
You don't have enough, and we wanted to jump in on it as a company so fast. So we just bought it through our brokerage account for the company, and for ourselves, we own it ourselves.
Sure.
And that's how we do it.
Do you anticipate any sort of like issues as you go into year end, or, you know, dealing with your outside accountants or anybody that you'd have to kind of have conversations with? Or
that would have been an issue if we wanted to for the company buy actual Bitcoin, right? But since we bought it through our brokerage account, everything's there. We're not hiding anything. We've made this public. Like, there's nothing really to complain about. And yeah.
What do you maybe people around you besides your partners, maybe your family, your parents, that have your parents have a take on Bitcoin now? Do they see it as a solution to maybe some of their
they don't get it.
Okay. Even though it kind of really solves a problem they lived through and that I might hopefully never live through. But it doesn't look likely that I won't, but.
They bought a little.
Okay.
Based out of trust.
Sure, in you. Yep. That's something.
I made them buy a little and they didn't even know what it is. And I told them, listen, guys, you probably wouldn't understand this, but you trust me and I'm sure this is good for you.
Sure.
So let me put some money for you into this, and they did it, and they're starting. I'm slowly starting to talk to them about it. I bought them the Bitcoin Standard in Arabic.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so I saw you tweet about that. Yeah,
I just did that today actually, and slowly I have to educate, because Bitcoin is a process. You know, it's not you can't get it right away. If you try to get it right away, you're going to think it's a scam, right? And you're going to think, oh, like, what am I buying? Like, oh, it's, you know, like, that's why my parents told me, you're buying nothing. But what a lot of people don't understand is that all money is digital, Cedric.
Sure.
Almost all of it. Tell me the last time you had more than 10% of your wealth in physical cash.
Do you foresee any instance where maybe physical cash becomes more valuable than digital cash?
No. Why would it be? It's harder.
Because of the scarcity of it?
It's dirtier. It's people are more disgusted by it now, right? Like,
what if you couldn't get money out of the ATM?
Sorry?
What if we couldn't get our money out of the ATM for a week or two?
That's going to be a big problem.
Right.
It's going to be a big problem. But like the point is, like, all money is digital, whether it's your stocks or your bank account, or you think the bank has all money in their bank. No.
Right. That's why you can only take out so much.
It's all air. And the thing is, they're messing with your money, right? Your money in the bank is being lent out, right? Rehypothecated, okay? Bank is making money off of it. It's printing more money as it's giving more people more debt. And then the central banks around the world are competing who's going to print more money, right? Right? Your money that's in your bank account is first of all digital, And second of all, it's being messed around with, right? And that's what Bitcoin pretty much solves. You take that money, you encrypt it, right? You change it into Bitcoin, and nobody can mess with it. Right? It's still digital, just right. like your money in the bank is.
It's encrypted but digital money. Can mess with it. Yeah. Michael Saylor's been talking about that lately on his rounds on the podcast.
I've been loving those conversations.
Yeah, he's been another one, probably the most foremost, obviously, who's newer to the space and is just killing it and really coming up with new ways of looking at things or just a new vantage point, you know. And a lot of that, I think, comes from the fact that he has $425 million on his balance sheet. He had this, you know, and Saifedean, on Saifedean's podcast, he was talking about how, you know, Michael Saylor was talking to Saifedean about how there's three different kinds of inflation and there's that really high-end inflation on the things everybody aspires to want. But he's in that group of people who aren't aspiring to want it. He's literally looking around saying the things I'm going to buy are going up in price. So the house he wants in the Hamptons, not the house he aspires to. You know, the property he's sitting on, because he's had that property. You know, the $20 million house in Miami. Most people don't have these problems of this much cash sitting around. And that's why I think he can think more clearly about it. You know, it's kind of like someone telling you about a VIP club and they've never been inside. So he really, you know, and you see it now with people like yourself running, you know, small businesses that are doing balance sheet management and trying to protect their balance sheet. And it makes total sense. And the volatility in the cash has become so much clearer since March, since the panic.
100%.
You know, the news and is talking about it. And it's, yeah.
Yeah. Like Cedric, like, you listened to that podcast. It was a great episode with Saifedean. And a lot of people don't know what's actually going on with inflation. They sure. think inflation is the 2%.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I saw this in high school. You know, that we do the CPI study and they're like, well, pick the goods that people use, but make sure you stay in this range.
Yeah.
And you kind of start, you know, and Michael Saylor talks about how it's a vector and you can kind of pick what's in the vector. And it makes total sense. But when I was 16, I'm like, well, what am I going to do about it? You know, there was no Bitcoin. I wasn't going to go out and buy gold and store gold in my vault, you know, in my room under my bed in my parents' house. So, you know, you kind of think about these problems, but then you kind of give up or a little, you kind of walk away because you're like, what am I going to do? And then Bitcoin changes that because it provides this new tool that we didn't have. And then that tool makes you see things differently. But I really think you need problems that the tool solves before you can understand the tool, and only, you know, to that point maybe then you start to understand it for you, you know, because it means a little something to everyone different.
Yeah completely agree with you. I think like people need to understand both the problem and the solution at the same time as well. Like if you think the world is fine and dandy and inflation is 2%, you're living a lie.
Right.
Right. Because that's not what's actually happening. What's happening is inflation is running 10%, and your retirement, what you're working for, you know, to retire is running away from you at a 10 to 15% inflation rate every year.
Right.
So if you think about that, if you're not making like 10 to 15% extra every year in revenue, your retirement is just running away from you.
Yeah, stolen.
Right? And this is what hopefully like people listen to this, like they can really start to think about that is you have a big problem. You have a really big problem. And going into a Bitcoin standard fixes this. You have to do your homework. You have to understand what it is. You have to go down the rabbit hole and really educate yourself.
Yeah. I think one of the main issues to kind of getting the word out is I think a lot about the framework that you approach someone in. So in the context of our conversation, I think about your customers and, you know, I'm sure a lot of people, you know, I think have come at you at Twitter or in real life and said, are you going to take Bitcoin? And you've kind of mocked them a little bit or kind of like, well, Bitcoin is savings technology. It's not spending technology. And it's the right way to look at it. Because if you push Bitcoin on a customer, they're just going to look at you like, well, why do I need this other medium of payment? I it's not even a medium exchange. It's, to them, it's a medium payment. And they have a really good working one in all the ones we know about. And the same thing when I talk to maybe people at a party or wherever I meet them, because all it sounds like to them is gains. And, you know, it's a way for them to make gains. And right now, because of the way the assets are inflated and the market's inflated, they're getting gains. They might not be getting the same asymmetric bet that Bitcoin provides on that front, but they're not seeing a problem because they're not in Egypt in the early 2010s, and they're not having some of these issues that Bitcoin solves. And it's hard for me to get people excited about Bitcoin outside of gains, because I'm like, no, let's forget about the gains. Like, just talk about the money. You know, the whole come for the gains, stayed for the money. But it's hard for people to kind of grasp onto that because they have money and they think it's good. And they don't question their own money. So that's kind of the issues I've been running into as I try to just kind of evangelate.
We all do what we can, Cedric. And a lot of people won't listen. But, you know, we'll do what we can, and then hopefully they'll get it sooner than later and really start to understand it. I think, like, we have, I kind of want to get a message out there to the Muslim community, right?
Sure.
Because I'm in the Muslim community here in London, and they are some of the most intelligent, hardworking communities in Canada. Like, all of my friends are all dentists, doctors, lawyers. My family, they're dentists, they're professors, they're engineers, right? They're really smart people. And they provide a lot for the community, right? But they don't really understand money, right? And then that's what you understand when you read the Bitcoin Standard by Saif al-Din, right? It really talks and explains what money is,
right?
And there's a big problem that we have in the Muslim community is that, I don't know if you know this or not, Cedric, but for Muslims, we consider interest as mm-hmm. forbidden. Mm-hmm. We don't like interest. Mm-hmm. Okay? And that, however, we live in a debt economy. Interest is everywhere, right? Interest is all over. You can't do anything without getting debt and using interest, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you basically, as a Muslim, you have a few options, okay? First option is ignore your principles and take on massive amounts of debt and just join, completely embrace debt economy and just go at it, okay? Option number two is be poor, right? Don't take on any debt. Work and save your money in cash, right? Get poorer every year by a factor of 10 to 15%, okay? And just try to catch on to everybody around you, right? Because everybody around you is completely embracing the debt economy, but you're just slacking behind. And every year it's getting worse and worse and worse. And you've done nothing wrong. You're a very smart, skillful like dentist or lawyer or engineer or... But you feel something's wrong, right? So that's the second option, be poor, right? Third option, go study how to invest your money, figure out the stock market, become a professional investor. But you're a dentist, you're an engineer, you don't have time for that stuff,
right?
And what's the easy alternative? What does everybody in the equity market tell you the best way to invest in the stock market is? Is buy an index fund. Diversify, exactly.
Sure.
Diversify, buy an index fund, okay? But we have a big problem with index funds, right? They have weapon companies, they have alcohol companies, right. They have cigarette companies. We don't want to invest in that.
Sure, sure.
Right?
I get what you're saying.
So that's out of the table. right? So unless you really study how to invest in individual companies, right?
Full-time job. You're,
good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck figuring that out.
Right.
Right? What's the probability that you're going to win? Not high.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So all Muslims around the world right now are faced with this problem because the whole world is running on the debt economy.
And are these debt options available in Egypt? And
No, they're not even available.
So for this community, I think that you're specifically referencing, which probably most first or second generation, it is a new framework that they're even entering. So it's not like they grew up with it and they're refusing to be in it. Like maybe say the Amish, it's new and there are new options, but there are built-in biases against it. And rules. That's interesting that there's new opportunities, but there's, you know, it's like it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks well. Yeah.
Yeah. So having said that, you have those options, and you only have those options if you're living in the Western world or Europe or something like that. Like Muslims around the world, they don't have, you know, you don't have access to the stock market, right? You don't have access to getting loans from a bank. Right? You don't have access to any of that. So these people have it worse.
Right.
Right? So this is where Bitcoin comes in. All right? And I hope Muslims that are listening to this can really like share it around every single community.
Yeah.
This applies to everyone's work, right? And
But you're talking about your local community, and that's why.
I'm talking about that, but this really is a problem that everyone's facing.
Right.
Right? But I'm trying to because I think the Muslim community are really like far behind on this. Like they don't have any idea of what Bitcoin is and what it solves and what it's worth.
Yeah.
Right?
I get it. Yeah.
So, and it solves a big problem for them, right? And it solves a big problem for everyone. So, what is it? Right? I tweeted this out, right? And I have it. I try to simplify it as much as I can. And what we came to the conclusion is that Bitcoin is a true free savings technology that stores wealth across time and space.
Right.
Right? But you really have to dissect that a little bit, right? So it's free in terms of like, the person that created it is not charging a subscription to use it, right? It's free in that sense. It's free that it gives you freedom to transfer your money from Egypt to anywhere you want in the world, to take your wealth with you, and it gives you freedom that way. So it's free in that sense, right? It's free that it's optional, right? It's not forced upon you by any entity, any government.
Voluntary, yeah.
Right? It's voluntary, right? You're free to come in, you're free to go out, you're free to do whatever you want. Okay? It's true, and the fact that it's like verifiable by everyone in the world that you own the Bitcoin that you own.
Right.
Right. It's true in the fact that you can verify the network and audit the entire network by yourself in a computer in Antarctica, right? Using a satellite if you wanted to. Right?
Yep.
So it's true in that sense. It gives it's the most truest thing you can ever think of.
Yeah.
If you think about it that way, right? And then it's a savings technology because it's fixed, right? Nobody can mess with it. No country, no company, no person, group of people, whatever. Nobody can mess with it. It's a savings technology, right? And then it's encrypted, right? You have the biggest computer network of the world working on making this thing stronger and stronger every day, right? And if you think what I'm saying is gibberish, people that are listening, go do your homework, do your research, and try to understand this, right? And then it stores wealth across space. You're not, if you have your Bitcoin in like, say your hardware wallet, you're not actually having it in your hardware wallet. It's stored on that biggest computer network in history of mankind, right?
Yep.
So it's literally stored across space, right?
Yeah.
And then it stores wealth across time because of two things, right? Because of the absolute scarcity factor, right? And if you really want to understand how that affects money, read the number zero in Bitcoin by Robert Breedlove. And the other thing is the halving event, which happens every 4 years. Supply of Bitcoin gets cut in half, right? Increases the purchasing power of Bitcoin based on supply and demand economics.
Yeah. I'm wondering, you know, it seems like you were a kind of a Bitcoiner pre-Bitcoin. You know, you were a saver, a worker, you know, adding value to the world, got a good head on your shoulders. How do you think Bitcoin, if at all, changed you since March in ways outside of just your balance sheet management, if at all?
Honestly, it made my work have more purpose, have more meaning.
Right.
My work, personally, I make money. I keep, what I need for like 6 months in fiat. The rest,
working capital.
Goes all into Bitcoin, right? And the same thing for my business. And how that changed me is basically it made my work, mean something, right? The effort that I put because I adopted the Bitcoin standard means more because I know the work that I did today, tomorrow, next week, next month is going to store across time and space, right?
Yeah.
It's not being inflated away. It's not being like, when you have that like subconscious feeling that your money is being inflated away slowly, it kind of slowly brings you into depression and being down, and you tend to compensate by overspending on stuff you don't need, like a car, or like not in a car, but I mean like a really expensive car or whatever, right?
Sure.
But when you know what you're making right now, the value of your work is going to be valued forever with like monetary value, that works becomes a lot more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Meaningful. Right? Sure.
You tend to work with your heart more when you have that feeling.
Right. I agree.
And that's how it changed me personally.
Yeah, that's awesome. I noticed on your web on Twitter you guys tweeted about donate to Lebanon and help. Can you maybe talk about what's going on in Lebanon and how people can help and what might that money go to?
So we did that after that explosion that happened in Beirut. I think the whole world saw that explosion, and it's pretty bad. We just wanted to help with any way we can. We wanted to help with a link to the Lebanese Food Bank, and they basically can go there. We're not affiliated with that entity in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Took the link, put it on our social media platforms, and our audience had the option. Like we tried to have our audience to support this cause.
Yeah. Are they going through a banking crisis now, Lebanon?
Yeah, they're going through hyperinflation right now, and it's just and that was before the explosion.
Yeah.
And it's horrible. We have actually Lebanese employees here, a lot of them.
Yep.
And
you would think this message would resonate, what's going on in Lebanon now. The opportunities in this country, the country being built on debt, our monetary system at least. You know, I would just be screaming and jumping up and down. Yeah. It must be frustrating.
I have an employee that worked his whole life. He had a restaurant back in Lebanon, sold it, had the money stored in a Lebanese bank, his whole life savings.
Gone.
Right? Before he came and worked with us. And it's all deflated, like inflated now to nothing.
Right. Right. Value just gone. Retirement's gone. Yep. Poof.
Gone. Yeah. Years of work just like that in a few months.
Yep.
Right. And people here in the Western world, they don't think it can happen
in New York and London and San Francisco. And
they take it for granted.
Yep.
You know, they don't. I've seen that in Egypt. I see it now in Lebanon.
I mean, I think it's by design. It's money's not taught in school for a reason. It's engineered. So, I mean, we can't. It's hard to be upset, I guess. You know, this is the outcome that was desired. But by the people that are benefiting from this, you know, malincentive design system.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, awesome. Tell us more, or at least how can we find you? You know, maybe more than just Twitter, so people can come down to your restaurants and partake. Well,
yeah, for sure. So on Twitter, we're at the real Tahinis on Twitter. You can reach us there. We have 4 restaurants in London, Ontario, with 3 about to open up in the GTA area. We built a solid franchise model. So if you're in Ontario and you're thinking about owning your own business, shoot us up on Twitter, you know, let us know and we'll talk about it. And we have TikTok accounts too, and Instagram and Facebook, the whole shebang. We're everywhere.
Right on. So, yep. Yeah. Next time we'll have to have your parents on the show and we'll convince them.
I'm slowly trying. They have to read Saifedean's book first. So,
thanks for being here. Really appreciate it. Yo, I want to thank Ali Hammam of Tahini's Restaurants for coming on the show and sharing his Bitcoin story, wisdom, and getting the good word out for the Muslim community right here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And thank you for listening. If you dug the show, please vote with your thumbs and press those 5 stars. That's the best way to spread the word. This is Cedric. Peace.